Did that. We've done that. All right. I'm Dusty. I'm an alcoholic. And last year you got the 40-minute version. Today you're going to get the 10-minute version. Anyhow, my sobriety date is November 29th, 1990. And I don't know why, but last year I kept saying November 27th, and my wife corrected me when we got in the car to come home. She says, "You kept saying the 27th. And I said, "No, I didn't." She said, "Yes, you did." So I did. Anyhow, it's the 29th of November, 1990. And by the grace of God, I've been sober that whole time. Unbelievably, I have my two children back into my life. They treat my third wife with a lot of love and respect. And it's all because of Alcoholics Anonymous. Laura and I have been trudging this road together now for 19 years? Yeah, 19 years. We've been married 16 now. I met her at the Great Outdoor Beaver Meeting in Beaver, Utah. A friend of ours by the name of... What's so funny about that? I'm just telling you the facts, okay? So, anyhow, my friend Don Locke started this meeting in Beaver, Utah by accident. He was afraid of flying, so he asked his wife if he could go. They were going to go to the International Convention in 1985 up at Denver, Colorado. Was it 85? Yeah, 85 in Denver, Colorado. And he asked his wife if it would be okay if he drove up and she could fly. And she said, yeah. So he went around and he'd ask you, "Are you going to the International?" And if you said, "Oh, no, I can't, I'm working," he'd, "Okay." And he'd go to the next person. And when you told him, "I can't afford to go," he wrote your name down in a little notebook. And by the time he was done, he had about 40 people. It was the 40th anniversary of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so, you know, he thought this was perfect. So he calls New York and he says, "Listen, I got 40 newcomers that can't afford to go. You know, can you help us out?" And they said, yeah, they could. And so then he called Denver and he asked the Denver Central Office, "Can you find a bunch of people that can put 40 people up on their couches or in their campers or whatever?" And he did. They did that. And so then he checked with AAA to find out what the halfway point between Los Angeles and Denver was. And that was almost Beaver, Utah. And that's the name of the town. I mean, you know, it's... And after they did that, they ended up having an AA meeting. They got a hold of St. George and they put a nice AA meeting together. And when it was all done, the folks of Utah said, "You know, you got to come back. This was great. You've got to come back." So now we go back in September, every Labor Day weekend. I'd been going there for several years. My wife had gone there several times before I met her. She and I used to live in a neighborhood very close to each other. I went to her 20th birthday party. She had a kegger party, and I saw a lot of people at the front door. I said, "Let's go." So we didn't meet, at least I don't think we met. But I was at her 20th birthday party at her nice kegger. I don't know how much I drank, but I had enough. I don't think I've ever had enough. But anyhow, so then... We meet in Beaver, Utah, and we go to breakfast. First we go to lunch when she got back from Beaver, and we started kind of seeing each other a little bit. She was a newcomer. She had 8 months. I had 9 years, and so I was doing a little 13 stepping. I've been told that it's not a step any longer. It's now a tradition. So I was doing some 13 tradition work. And so anyhow, we started to see each other. And you know, one thing led to another. We were sitting at breakfast at Bobby's coffee shop one morning. And she said, "You know, take me by here." And I took her by here. I said, "I've been here for a kegger party." She says, "That was my 20th birthday." We got to talk. And turns out that she and I crossed paths a lot. I had been to meetings to either give a cake or see somebody take a cake or hear somebody talk or to talk or whatever the situation was, and she was at that meeting. We had a couple that they would have a Christmas party every year, and we were both invited to that, and we went, but we didn't meet. And then we were invited to a friend's house. They had a New Year's Eve party every year. Both of those couples have since separated, and those parties don't happen anymore. But we went to those parties and never met. And it was funny because at the New Year's Eve party, I showed up at the New Year's Eve party. She'd been in there telling everybody about me, and I got up there and they, "Oh, we know him." And so anyhow, they told her to stay away from him. She doesn't listen. But anyhow, sobriety, I'm kidding about that. Sobriety has been wonderful for me. I got here with this complete confusion and lost. I started drinking when I was 12 years old, and I drank with the idea of having fun. I saw adults drinking at a house where they used to have a lot of parties, and they would come to the party dressed kind of like I am right now, nice, you know, proper and whatever, and they'd start to drinking, and they'd loosen up their ties, they'd take off their jackets, they'd tell jokes they shouldn't tell in front of 12-year-olds, and they were having fun. And I wanted to have some fun, and I equated it to the alcohol that they were drinking. And that's what I started to drink for fun. And every time I would drink for fun. At age 17, I went over to a friend's house, and he was working on his truck, and he said, "Hey, Dusty, go to the refrigerator, get us a beer." And I went back there, there's only two beers in the refrigerator. "What? A beer?" So I brought him one, and he said, "Aren't you going to have a beer?" And I said, "No, I don't really feel like it." You know, I didn't understand that at the time, but at 17 years old, I already knew I didn't want a beer. I wanted fun. You know, I wanted to have that fun. I wanted to drink and really get it on. And one beer just isn't going to start. And if we had a case in there, I would have started drinking. But why waste my time on one? By the time I got to the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, I had for years been trying to have just one. If I could just have one. Tonight I'm only going to drink one. Tonight. And then, of course, tomorrow would come, and then tomorrow would be, you know, "Oh, I'm not going to do that again. I'm not going to drink like that. I'm not." I had a 502 up here on the grapevine coming home from Paso Robles August 9th. What was it? It was booked August 13th. The accident was on August 12th, 1990. And after I got out of jail and saw my car, I swore to God I would not drink and drive again. But I didn't know that I suffered from the disease of alcoholism. And I got back to that car and I saw that car and I swore to God I would not drink and drive again. And within days, I had another car, no license, but I had another car, and I was drinking and driving again. And every time I'd do it, I would cuss myself for, you know, "You can't do this, you can't do this." And it took me until November 17th, where I had my very last drink. The last few days of my drug use and everything, I smoked marijuana for I don't know how many days I really did. I chose the 29th of November because I know I was clean and sober that day. But I was going to a couple AA meetings. I went to my first AA meeting. I was maybe a little high on marijuana, you know. But I hadn't had a drink since the 17th, and everybody greeted me the way I got greeted today. You guys were great. Laura and I came walking in, and we were greeted by many of you very warmly. Thank you very much for that. I want to thank the group for inviting my wife, because I get a free breakfast out of the deal. And thank you for putting us up last night. It was a very nice place that you put us up. Enjoyed our stay here. Really appreciate that. And that's what Alcoholics Anonymous has given me from the first day I walked in here. I went to that very first meeting, and when I was out in the driveway walking towards the meeting, I was getting there late, like a good newcomer does, you know, or did for me anyhow. And to the newcomers, I want to welcome you and let you know, this is a very safe place to get a life. I mean, I thought I had a life, but it wasn't, you know. Today I have a life, and you guys gave it to me. So for the newcomers, learn this stuff that we're saying, you know, the reading the 12 traditions, those are important. They're a little boring, but they're really important. Thank you for doing that, Susan. Really appreciate it. If you think they're boring, you ought to try the concepts. We're having a concept meeting down in the valley. If you'd all like to come down here, what the hell are these? The 12 concepts. So anyhow, you know, I have a lot of fun in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that first day I walked into that very first meeting, I got there late, and I sat by the back door with right under this light switch that I could get out immediately. You know, I didn't know if there was going to be an emergency or something. In the driveway, I was not an alcoholic. In the driveway, as I walked towards that meeting, you could have put a lie detector machine on me and I would have passed. I'm not an alcoholic. And the reason for that is because I didn't know what an alcoholic was. Now, if you'd asked me if I was a thief and I lied about it, the machine would have gone off because I knew what a thief was. I was one. You know, but I didn't know what an alcoholic was. I walked into that room. I sat back there under that light switch, wondering why the hell my therapist asked me to do this. And I read the 12 steps. They had the 12 steps on the wall behind the podium. And that first step says, we. We admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. And I'll tell you, that was the greatest thing that I'd ever read. I had a movie play through my mind about all the times that I'd taken a drink when I wasn't going to take more than one, all the times I'd promised my kids, all the times I'd promised the ex-wife, my employer, my family, whoever. When I took that drink took me. And I no longer had the ability to make a choice. And I understood that when I read that first step, that I was powerless over alcohol. And then I started to cry because I did not want to be powerless over alcohol. I didn't want to be one of you. And I'm so glad that I am today. I really am. But that got me started. All my life people said, you should, you ought to. Why don't you? I came into AA and you guys said, we do this, you know. And I found a real safe place here. Frank Diaz handed me a directory at the break. Said, go to all the meetings in this directory till you find the meetings you like and keep going back to those meetings. And one of the traditions talks about conformity. You know, I want everybody in AA to do it my way. But the traditions tell me that we don't have conformity around here. We do it the way we find it to be done, you know, for us. And the instruction manual is right here. This is the instruction manual. I got a lot of BS that I can spew out, but this has worked. This has worked for, what are we working on? We're working on 90 years or 85? What's the math? 85 years. We're working on 85 years. Laura and I have been to a bunch of the international conventions. We're going to be going to another one here in 2020. We're going to beautiful Detroit, Michigan. I've heard a lot of people say really negative things about it. But I'll tell you what, when you take a town and fill it with a bunch of alkies, there's nothing better. Nothing better at all. My very first convention was in 1995 in San Diego. And I mean, there was 80,000 of us in San Diego. And there were only two arrests. And both of those were for people that were drunk in San Diego, that lived in San Diego, that didn't even know we existed. You know, the town hadn't had that much peacefulness ever. You know, San Diego's a marine town, a navy town. It's a hooping and hopping and fighting town. And they only had two arrests the whole time we were there. The International Convention 2020, Detroit, Michigan. I love doing this stuff. Alcoholics Anonymous is my life. Because without Alcoholics Anonymous, I would not have a life. And, you know, I'm so appreciative for all of the people that have crossed my paths. Yeah, I thank God for putting Frank Diaz in my path, for putting my sponsor Ed Perry in my path. I get 50 cents every time I say his name. Ed Perry, Ed Perry, Ed Perry, Ed Perry. I love life. I love, you know, our kids are amazing. Just absolutely amazing. We like to camp. We like to fish. We like to fish. We don't fish. We do like to camp, though. And I always say that, you know, we're sitting around telling lies and smoking cigarettes. And then somebody will say, oh, you don't smoke. Oh, no, we don't. But we have fun here. And it was fun when we came up last year, and it's just been a blast this time. We came up a day early and went up to the sequoias and just enjoyed the beauty that we have here in California. And all I can say is thank you, God, thank you, God, thank you, God. And I think now we have a 10-minute break, right? Am I right? Let me read what I'm supposed to do. All right, my name is Dusty Brocious. I'm an alcoholic. And it is with great pleasure that I get to introduce my wife, Laura Brocious, as the speaker.
We out of room. I'm Laura, an alcoholic. Thank you, Dusty. Thanks for being the 10-minute speaker and the leader. Thank you for being my Uber driver. We used to call my Uber driver, but now we my niece has my brother-in-law. His name's Gil, and she calls him her Goober driver, so now we make Dusty here the Goober driver. Probably way more than you needed to know, but that's what we call him these days. And he is a good, he drives a lot. So anyway, thank you for driving. This is a wonderful group. I really want to thank this group. It's a lively group. It's a friendly group. We got a lot of warm welcomes and had, and thanks for putting us up. And for the breakfast, for the dinner, it was a nice, it's nice. I feel welcome. I love Alcoholics Anonymous. My sobriety date's January 9th, 2000. That's not my first sobriety date. I hope that's my last. And I keep doing the things I've been doing. You know, God willing, that will be my last. But, if, you know, I know what I'm doing today. I have a pretty good chance of staying sober. But I also want to welcome the two fellas that were the newcomers and anybody else that's new that didn't identify themselves or anybody else that's coming back. Welcome to Alcoholics Anonymous. I hope you find what I found here. And it's a way to be comfortable in my own skin without drinking, without drugging, without having to alter my body. And even when I have problems or unresolved problems, I'm still learning how to live comfortably in my own skin. So I hope you find what I found here. And that's what I found. We were here a year ago when Dusty was the speaker, and it was so beautiful here. We decided we'll come a day early, and I'm thinking we need to come back. And we saw those giant sequoias again. We'd seen it before, but it's just so magical. And I didn't care about stuff like that. Well, I always wanted to do it, but I just sat on my couch and thought about it. Or, you know, it was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to do that. But I didn't do that. So let me start off. Let me take my cell phone out. I have a 2-minute warning for myself, so I don't want to, like, clutch my chest. I was raised my parents were got divorced when I was 7. I went and lived with my mother. I've lived in California since I was about 2, and I lived in this. I'm a Valley girl, and we went. I have an older sister. I had an older brother, and I'm the youngest. So once I was 7 when my parents got divorced, and we went and moved. We all went with my mom, but we'd see my dad every like month or 2 months. We'd go with him for the weekend. But the rules were very different in those two places. With my mom, it was like all bets are off. You could do whatever you wanted. And she started hitting the bars after once she got divorced. So she didn't give a lot of rules. But the rules she gave were unusual rules, like no smoking pot till you're 12. And I could stay home from school as much as I wanted, as long as I got good grades. And I was a rule follower, unlike my brother, who was not. And my sister kind of was strapped with really being the adult in the family, because my mom just wasn't home. And my dad had no idea this was going on. So when I'd get, he'd see my report card and he'd go, 4 A's, 2 B's, 18 absences. And his face would go beet red and he'd get all mad. But he didn't know that, you know, my mom just allowed me to stay home whenever I wanted. And it was different then. They didn't have all this computerized everything. And the parents couldn't check online to see what was going on. So very different. Anyway, but I got taught kind of different things, like you don't have to show up for things. You know, I got taught very differently when I came to AA. You better be showing up, especially in H&I. You show up for your panel unless you have you're on your way to a funeral and it's yours. So my mom was drinking and it was, before they got divorced, they used to have these pool parties. We had a house in Granada Hills, put a pool in it. And I'd take little sips. I do remember this. I'd like take little sips off the adults' drinks and then go socialize, sit on the laps. And I kind of like that. I kind of remember that. That's my first memory of drinking, but not problem drinking. Social drinking. Then when I was in high school, and I drank sometimes on the weekends. This is just what happened. There was booze around the house, but what I did was I started smoking pot when I was 12. I mean, on my 12th birthday. I waited until I was 12, and then I started, you know, then I was pretty much a daily pot smoker after that. And but then I drink on the weekends with my friends. I'd have my mom drank Johnny Walker Red, and I'd mix it with Hawaiian Punch and just get a little loose. And then eventually, I still wasn't a daily drinker for a while, but eventually I started drinking where I couldn't control what would happen once I started drinking. And sometimes I drank and I couldn't remember what would happen when I drank. And I think by the time I was about, 18 or 17, 18, it was getting to be like that. But I wasn't drinking all the time, but when I drank, it was that. And that to me is, that's, you know, the 20 question questionnaire we have from the Johns Hopkins University will tell you if you have a question if you're an alcoholic or not, you can take that. But for me, I just need the question, do you have any idea of what's going to happen once you start drinking? And do you? I don't. So one of the things that happened to me when I was in high school, I got kicked out of high school for selling pot to a narc. Now, I got very angry about this because I loved school. I was doing really well. I was in advanced courses, and I never sold pot at school. It was always at home. My mom knew I was doing it. But I never graduated, and I got kicked out and indefinitely suspended from LA City schools. And so I got pretty mad, but then I had more time to drink and to smoke pot and do things. And eventually, then my mom's drinking really escalated, so I moved in with my dad. And my mom started really blacking out and forgetting what she's saying, embarrassing me in front of my friends. But then I went to Pierce College and just. But my drinking was getting kind of sloppy. For an example, one time I forgot that I was supposed to take an exam for the placement of English placement. And I was so hungover. I couldn't even look at the pages, and I just turned in a blank booklet, and I ended up in dummy English, which I really didn't belong in dummy English, but I was so hungover I just couldn't even focus on the pages. So things were starting to happen to me like that. Like once I was in the library and I was so hungover I had to throw up, and I just threw up right in my purse. Lovely. Now today, young person, I had the ego like nobody could know. Today I would have just on the floor. But then, unladylike things like that. So things just were getting worse for me. And eventually, let's see. I did get two different AA degrees in Pierce College, but one of them, then I went to, got married, husband number one, number three, as he already mentioned. I was wife number three, this is husband number three, but I got married, and then right away I went into nursing school, and I just couldn't, I couldn't drink, and I couldn't smoke pot, do the things I like to do, and do well in school. So I kind of put them on the shelf, and I was able to do that. But as soon as I had a break, I would drink, and I, like, one of my worst hangovers ever was when I was on break from nursing school, and my dad lived in Colorado, and I went to visit him. Oh my God, I still remember that hangover. He wanted to go show in his Jeep, Colorado, and I remember every bounce in my head. Oh, you know, I just really remember that. You know, I just can't have just one. I always overdo it. Not always, but I would overdo it a lot. So anyway, I managed to get through nursing school, but then. Shortly after nursing school, I had another bright idea when I was drinking. I got in a fight with my husband, number one, and I was really mad. And I looked around the house when I was drunk and thought, what could I do to piss him off? And I thought, oh, I'll punch a window, because he was cheap and we lived in the valley and we had a swamp cooler. So I thought, I'll punch the window and he'll have to replace it. He wasn't good at things like that. So I thought, it never occurred to me I'd hurt myself. Never occurred to me. It was like, you know, in the movies you see them, they just, you know, the windows just break and nothing happens. Oh, I almost got off my right hand. So I severed all the tendons in my median nerve for my right hand, and to this day I still have limited feeling in three of my fingers. And I showed him. It was just, I didn't, I got him in the budget all right. I never did work while we were married, but, because I, at that time, when I went to apply, and I had passed my boards, but I went to apply for a job, and I didn't have the fine motor movement to, like, stay within the lines. So I graduated in 83. I got married in 81 and graduated in 83, and I didn't work until 87. So I got, divorced after 4.5 years. Anyway, so that's one of my great ideas when I was drinking. And I would just do things like I wouldn't show up for things. You know, I meant to. Like, my great aunt was like my grandma. And she invited me for Thanksgiving. And I said I was going, but I started drinking. And I never showed up. So, and I loved her. I would never think of doing that to her. Well, she's not alive now, but, you know, I wouldn't do that to anybody now, but especially, you know, I just can't imagine doing that. Anyway, so one of my friends that I didn't pass her boards, I talked to her, and she told me, she kind of blamed me for her not passing her boards. And so I really was calling to help her, so that I found out she didn't pass her boards. And I was drinking, and so I told her, look, if you pass, for her blaming me, I said, you know, you shouldn't, I don't think you're responsible, be a nurse if you're blaming me for what you do. So she didn't like that, and she said, you're a mean drunk, and you need to go to AA in the next week or never talk to me again. So I went, and then 10 days later, and I went to my first AA meeting, and this was 1984. And I went, and I offered to be, they were having elections, and I offered to be the secretary, and they told me, yeah, keep coming back. And I went to another meeting or two, but I didn't keep coming back. I didn't. And unfortunately, I didn't. But that's just not my story. I guess I don't have to say unfortunately. It just wasn't my story. So I went back in 87. By this time, I got divorced. And then 10 days later, I married husband number two, was a friend of my brother's. And then I was starting to get hungover and screwing up at work, and I thought, oh God, and I saw somebody with the AA symbol around their neck, and I thought, boy, I really need to quit drinking. And So I also, one of the things that happened was, let me think of this. Another one I showed him. I was drinking with my brother and I got mad at him and I rammed my Volvo into the back of his truck, and purposely. And he had this heavy duty bumper of some sort on his truck, and my Volvo looked like an accordion. And I went to try to call the police, but I was so drunk. And at this time we didn't have cell phones. I was so drunk that I couldn't figure out the payphone. But I drove from Woodland Hills to Burbank like that, which is, you know, probably, I don't know, 30 miles or something, you know, 45-minute drive. Managed to make it home. I have no idea how. But, and that's when I decided, I looked at my car and thought, oh, my God, I need to go back to those meetings. And I did go back, and I went to it's a very strong group in Burbank called the Angelino Group. It's moved since, but women would give me their numbers, and I'd go a little bit late, and they'd shake hands, and I out the door, man. I wouldn't like stay. I wouldn't talk to anybody, and I saw the steps on the wall, and I thought, geez, if I have to make amends to husband number one, I'll be drinking for sure. So I think I'll just do this my way. I'll do it on my own. And so I did not drink for about almost a little over a year. But then I had eye surgery, and I thought, well, you know, a little pot would help the eye surgery, and a little, you know. And then I started, and then I was working as a nurse, so one pill for me, one for the patient, two for me, you know. And then I started getting worse and worse, and then I started drinking cough syrup because of the alcohol in it, because I wasn't drinking, but I drink cough syrup. Oh, and you know, I puke this green. I go to the different Save-Ons in Burbank, like two different Save-Ons, one across town. So God forbid they know I'm drinking two bottles a day. It was really for the alcohol. So finally one day I just thought, just drink. You know, you just want to drink. I mean, I would drink the cough syrup and chase it with a little candy. Ugh, today I still get nauseated to think of it. But finally I just thought, you really are just drinking, so just drink. So I started drinking Mickey's. And it was... I did want to drink hard, like vodka or something like that, hard liquor, because I get slurry. But then I wouldn't just drink beer; I'd drink like malt liquor. Then I'd still get slurry. Well, I just wasn't, you know. So because I wanted that buzz, man. I didn't want to just drink a little bit; I wanted to feel it. So anyway, this is when the point when I saw somebody was at work with the AA symbol, and I thought, I really am getting in trouble. I transferred jobs, and I was so hungover I couldn't go to work, and I thought, oh, I'm going to get in trouble again at work. So I went, I told the gal, I need to go to a meeting, and she said, well, just tell me when you're ready. So about 3 weeks later, I went to a meeting with her, and she took me to a CA meeting. Now, I didn't know she was taking me to CA, and I only got in trouble with cocaine one time, not like, you know, I did it socially, so I didn't think that I should have to go to CA. I was kind of pissed, but when I got there, it was people my age, and I was a drug addict, because I told you my pot smoking daily for many, many years, and I said I was an alcoholic and a drug addict, and it was like a big weight off my shoulders. And so I started going to the meetings, and I started feeling better. And another significant thing that happened, about 9 months sober, I started praying every day. Now, I always believed in God, but I didn't have a relationship with God. And I started forming a relationship with God by praying every day. And then there was this guy, Willie. He was my first black friend, and he was very friendly to me. He was at the CA meeting, and what I didn't know was it was his job to be friendly to me, because he was a greeter. But I never had a black friend before, so now I had, my life was expanding, things were changing. I learned how to camp sober. they had a campvention, a CA campvention. I got onto the JCPenney catalog, ordered my camping gear, and off I went with it. I brought my girlfriend, my truck, my niece was about 5 at the time, and my dog, and off we went, and we had a great time. And I mean, I just learned to do things sober. And I got the coffee commitment. Oh, my God. See, now, this is when I was taught to show up. Like, you show up. Like, no doing a good job when you're there. You better be showing up with the coffee commitment. They take it serious. I remember one time I was even sick, and I showed up for the coffee commitment, made the coffee, and left. Typhoid Mary, thanks a lot. But I was only going to one meeting a week, which I wouldn't recommend. But then I decided I think I better start going to more meetings, and I needed a different sponsor because my sponsor was a friend at work, and she said, well, I can't be your friend anymore if I'm your sponsor. And also, she decided she wasn't alcoholic. She was just a cocaine addict. So I thought, I think I need an alcoholic sponsor. So I got a different sponsor, started going to more meetings, started feeling better. But one of the things that happened, was... my brother was alcoholic, and he started going to our Tuesday, still the CA meeting Tuesday night, and he'd get suicidal when he drank, and he'd do okay when he wasn't drinking, but then this was a new thing for him. He'd get suicidal when he drank, and so at the Tuesday night meeting, we made him. Said, well, why don't you be the greeter? I don't want to do it. Well, what is it? What is it? Like, you know, he'd always have no to everything, but he did the greeter commitment. But then eventually he drank again and he took his own life. So I'm here to tell you that I have a great deal of fun in Alcoholics Anonymous, but it's a deadly disease, and I saw it happen in my own family. My brother was 37 at the time. His daughter was 4 years old. And she's doing well now. She has a master's degree. She got married in June. We were invited to the wedding. But no thanks to my brother. She's doing well. But anyway, I'm here to say that, you know, I take it serious because, you know, it shows what I see the difference with my brother and with myself was I saw men reach out, just like when in Burbank when I was going to the Angelino group and women would reach out to me and I didn't reach back. Men reached out to my brother and he didn't reach back. And I said, why don't you try praying? And he said, he was about ready to, but he never tried it. He would scoff it. He was one of those that would scoff. So when I read that, I think of him. And he didn't remain to pray. So then I stayed sober for about 5 years, but then I decided I thought it would be a good idea to take Fen-Phen, and I ended up relapsing with that. So I relapsed twice with pills, and then in January of 2000, I thought, if I don't knock this off, I'm going to die like my own brother. I still was going to meetings, but I took a 3-year cake, actually. But I thought I'm going to die, so I started over. I was going on about my merry way, and I'm here to tell you that I used to look at people that would relapse and think, come on, you know, can't you get it? Like, what's with you? You know, I used to judge those that would relapse. It never occurred to me I would be one of them. Never occurred to me. And I was one of them. It just was insidious. You know, I took the Fen-Phen. It had amphetamine derivative. I had no business taking it, but I did it. And I even asked my sponsor. I didn't ask my CA old sponsor because she would have said, run the other way. And I knew that. The other thing I didn't do is I didn't put AA first. I kind of put AA on the back burner. And I still was going to meetings, but it wasn't first in my life. So those are the things that I see that happened to me. But another thing that happened to me, as Dusty was telling when he was telling his 10-minute pitch, is I met this guy that was so enthusiastic with AA. And he came in 90, and when I was in CA, it was 91. So I haven't drank since 91. I'm sober 19 years. because I relapsed those times with pills. But and my dad died, like my brother died in August, my dad died in March. It was rough, but I had stayed. But people in AA were really there for me. So we had some similarities. Like he came in and his mom had died like early in his sobriety. My dad died. And I'm thinking, but he stayed sober, so what's he doing that I'm not doing? And I was questioning myself, like, what is, well, he was making AA number one in his life. That's what he was doing. He was showing up early to meetings. He was doing lots of service. And some of the things I was not doing. So I started doing some of those things. Not some of those things. I started doing the things I saw him doing. I started, like, I wouldn't skip my meetings, because before, like my Tuesday meeting, I'd go to my Tuesday meeting, but if somebody had a better idea, like let's go to movies and a dinner, I'd go, sure, let's go. But now, no, Tuesday is my night for a meeting. Can we make it Wednesday or Thursday? You know, that's what I do now. And I got more involved in service, and I just started doing things differently and putting AA first. And there's a part in the book that says when you put AA first, everything else you put second becomes first class, and I believe that. I've seen it in my own life. So I started doing those things, and interestingly enough, I haven't relapsed. So thank you, Jesse. Normally I say a friend, but since that friend already said we met in August, that's what happened. So I met Dusty, and my life started to change, and I started my, I did my steps. I was sponsoring women, and I still sponsor. I still pray, and I started over, and it was hard, you know, but I don't want to die, and I know alcoholism kills, so... So I started over, and I've had some good journeys, and I've had some trials. My mom and my stepfather lived in Florida, and they weren't doing well, and really weren't doing well. Their house was up for auction, and my aunt that lives a couple miles from them told my sister, they haven't paid their taxes, their house is up for auction. And so my sister went there, and their house was just in terrible disarray. And my stepfather was in his 90s, my mom was in her 80s. And then my sister said, we got to go back. And I wasn't going to go back. I was going to leave it to my sister. And my sponsor at the time said, oh, no, you're not leaving that to your sister. This is your mother, too. You're going. And I was complaining, oh, it's too expensive. And, time off. She says, I know how much money you make, and I know how much time off you have. You're going. So I listened to my sponsor. I'm one of those, I'm still the rule follower. So I listen to my sponsor when my sponsor tells me stuff. But... So I went, and it was really a good experience because my sister at the time was living in Dallas, and she's since moved to Austin, but she lived in Dallas, and I'd fly to Dallas, and then we'd drive to Florida, and we did this twice, Florida and back. And before, if I wasn't close, you'd ask me, are you close with your sister? The answer was no. But after these trips, we went and helped my mom. We got her a conservator. We got her a guardian. We got her situated, and my stepfather, too, with the helps of the court. It wasn't easy, but and her sister lives 3 miles away. We were going to move her to Texas, but her money wouldn't last as long, so we just left her in Florida. And, I caught putting on the big girl panties. So I showed up for my mother and for my stepfather and went through some of this hard stuff. And it was AA that taught me to show up. Like, I was going to not do it. And I'd been sober a while, but, I did do it. And then as we were driving, my sister and I would just chat it up the whole time. And my sister is not sober. She loves her wine. She drinks, but you could tell when we would be at the motel at night, on my side of the bed would be chocolate, candy, and hers would be her wine bottle. And I'd help her open it sometimes because her hands were bad. But we had a good time. And then, we just, the miles seemed to melt away the years and the distance. And pretty much every day on the way to work now, I call my sister. And I'm close with my sister. And now, since my stepfather and my mother have both passed away, and I'm left with just my sister and I are the ones left, and I have a very close relationship. And if you ask me today, I'm close with my sister. So that's what Alcoholics Anonymous has taught me, to show up. And if you do the right thing happens. And so... When Dusty spoke, we had just gotten back from Cabo. Her one daughter got married actually in September, but had like the party in Cabo for her wedding, her eldest daughter. And then this year we just got back like 2 weeks ago from Sedona, because that daughter threw herself a destination baby shower in Sedona. And we're invited to stuff with the family. Like, we get invited places, which wouldn't be the case when I was drinking. I didn't always get invited. Like, don't invite Laura, because you don't know what, they wouldn't know what was going to happen, you know, what I might do. And then that one niece, my brother's daughter, that she lives in Culver City, we got invited to her wedding. It was June of this year. And we showed up, you know, and I was there for her. And her mother looked pretty loaded, like wasn't a pretty picture. And I was so grateful it wasn't me. I was just really grateful I wasn't the one looking ugly, and like, just that wasn't the look that you saw in my, you know, my eyes were clear. I was present and not causing a problem for my niece. So I'm able to show up for my family. And we have, when Dusty's daughter got divorced, I was able to, right away I just showed up. I took off at lunch, and I heard at night, and then the next day at lunch, I just took off at lunch and showed up. She works for home. I went into her house. And I thought, you know, I might run into the ex, might be there, but she wasn't. And I'm friendly with his ex-wife, number one, but I just thought she, you know, her husband had left her, and it was kind of a bad situation. So I just showed up, and I mean, she was so grateful for that. And I stayed like an hour and a half, and she just spilled her soul, and, you know, and just said, like, I really appreciate you coming here and showing up for me. And then she has two kids. We have two grandkids from this daughter, and we're allowed to take them places. You know, they trust us taking them. Dusty took them to Zion this year, and you know, they want us in their life. We're invited places with them. But happily, that was a couple of years back when she got her husband left her, and happily she's going to be getting married this year. So, and we're invited to that. We were told, put, you know, save the date. So so a sober life, you know, we're just at work, I suit up, I show up. There's, you know, I'm respected that I work, I'm a psychiatric advice nurse. I work with a bunch of physicians, and they trust me. They, you know, they say that you know, we have our own program, chemical dependency program, but I have my own AA basket of literature with directories and San Fernando Valley and LA and Ventura County, and I have pamphlets and stuff. And sometimes the patients don't want to go to our program, and I'm willing to talk to them about AA. I may or may not break my anonymity to the patients, but the doctors know that I'm in the program, and that I'm willing to at least talk to the patients if they, you know, they're interested or they have questions about it. And one of the doctors just loves having the directories. He uses a lot of them. He loves having the directories. He has a little table, and he loves having them out. And he says it gives him street cred. So he says it opens a lot of conversations too that he wouldn't maybe have with somebody by having these directories out. He did want some Al-Anon ones. I gave him one that I had in my car, but I didn't have more of it. I said, hey, that's not my program. But often, as I'm saying that, I think, I better find some for him. So, he offered to pay for him, and I said, no, it's my community service. You know, but it feels good to be able to give back. You know, I give back in my own way and do H&I. That's another thing that I get that I've been involved with. Doing panels now. I didn't think, at first I didn't want to do H&I because the only time I got arrested was one time when I was, when I was 17 for selling pot to that narc. But I didn't do prison time. I got probation and $50 fine. So I never did do prison time. I didn't do jail. One time so they kept me overnight at that one particular time because it was the first time they had put the narcs in the LA City schools, and they wouldn't let me out even though my parents wanted to get me out. So they wouldn't let me out. So I spent the night in juvenile hall when I was 17, I do remember, they had me in solitary confinement, and then they let me in with the general population. I'm asking the girl next to me, what did you do, stab my boyfriend? I'm like, ooh, geez, I'm just a pot smoker. But a violent offender. But anyway, so I didn't want to do H&I because I thought, you know, I hadn't been in jail. But then, I just realized that people in jail don't need to know how to be in jail or what jail's like. They need to know how to be sober. And that I do know. And I know what works and what doesn't work. You know, some people that stay sober from day one, they know what works. But I know actually also what doesn't work. And so I've done different jail panels and some that are just, not just, but some H&I psych panels. But since I'm a psych nurse, I feel that one needs to be medicated and that one needs to, you know, I feel like I'm the charge nurse, so I tend to avoid the psych panels because I want to direct the show and I'm really there to be an alcoholic telling my story, so I try to avoid those. But I do like, one time we had an experience, Dusty and I, with the we did the Malibu Fire Camp panel, and it's the women that go to the fire camp. They go out on the fires, but they have a fire camp in Malibu. So one weekend, it happened to me my birthday weekend, I don't remember, maybe when quite a while ago when I was 10 maybe or something. And we were at the Friday night speaker meeting. This gal came running up to Dusty and then up to me. And she was so excited because she saw us when she was incarcerated at the fire camp. And she was just thrilled. She was out. She was doing the deal, doing really well. And it was really nice to see. And those are the moments that are just really nice when stuff, oh, do you remember me? Do you remember me? And they come and tell you, you know, they're actually sober and doing what we encourage them to do. When you get out, go to a meeting right away. And then that same weekend, we went to Delano Prison, which is kind of like this one. You know, we go to any lengths to stay sober, and I think coming to Springville is about 5 miles past any lengths. So is Delano. But no, I really do like it here, but it is a waste. Delano is also about 5 miles past. And we went to Delano, and Dusty saw, hey, here's this name called out. And it was a guy that he used to sponsor. And the guy was incarcerated. And so he had last time we saw him, he was sober. So there's the example of doing the deal and not doing the deal, and what you get. You're either free or you're not. And the same guy ended up killing somebody, and now he's not going to be getting out anytime soon. I mean, he got out since from the one time, and then once he got out, because he was like, oh, I know. He already knew everything when we were up there in Delano. Well, apparently he didn't, because when he got out, he drank again and killed somebody. So, but the point of that story was that I stayed sober. But that's not the point of this. The point was that I got to see both sides of the coin. Like what happens if you do, you know, stay on the path of sobriety, and what happens if you don't. Because, you know, I certainly could have gone to jail. I've gotten let off for different things. You know, pretty smile, nice blue bathing suit, this, you know, that kind of thing. It was a long time ago when I drank. It just wasn't my story that I got incarcerated. And I did a lot of drinking at home. So there's that. I've done general service, and that was, you know, really a good experience, an intergroup. It's just, I had a sponsor that used to say, if I encourage you to go to your regular meetings and then do something else in Alcoholics Anonymous to encourage you to grow and stretch. And I took that. I do that, and, you know, do some kind of a commitment. I had a sponsor that was a really, really strict sponsor, and I really learned a lot. And one of the things she taught me about were the steps to traditions and the concepts of world service. Now, I couldn't rattle off the concepts, probably even the traditions, but I do understand them. I know what they are. I know where they are in the book, you know, so it was helpful to me. You know, I love Alcoholics Anonymous, and I want to know about it. Because it saved my very life, and I want to be able to help somebody else and take the women through the steps and answer questions. Another thing I like to do when sober is I like to go to Sister B retreats or women's retreats. Sister B is a nun in recovery, and she's just on fire with AA. She's in her 80s right now, but I've gone to many weekend retreats with her now. She's pretty much scaling back to just day retreats. But she's taught me, you know, different things like no is a complete sentence. And if you think it's your will or God's will, you're wondering the question. If it feels like you're pushing a pea uphill with your nose, then it's probably your will. And then Father Tom taught me, like, if you're having a bad day and you run into one a-hole, well, everybody has a bad day like that. It happens. If you're running into two a-holes in a day, that's a real bad day. If you're running into three a-holes in a day, guess what? You're the a-hole. That's what I learned in Father Tom's retreat. you know, I also learned, you know, that I can count on the women. I have a home group. I have a sponsor. My sponsor's very loving. My sponsor knows she's my sponsor. I don't just call her when my hair's on fire. Like, I call her. She's, you know, I'm active. I'm current with my sponsor. My sponsor is Diane Deeds. She's, I go to a meeting with her so that she sees me where, you know, she's a wonderful woman. So if you're a woman in AA, my home group is the Women's Stag at the Hole in the Sky on Tuesday night at 6:30 p.m. Love to have you there. And if you're a man in AA, talk to Dusty. He's got lots of men's groups you could talk to him about. I'm glad you're here this morning. And there's something that we saw in Sedona that Dusty happened to mention that I really liked. It was a sign, and the sign said, "Winners must be present." So think about that. Thank you.